podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey gang, Nat here. Favour to ask. We are up for an award. Yep. It took me a while to work out quite how the hell that happened. But we are. The Sports Podcast Awards, no less. We are nominated in, unsurprisingly, the NFL category for Best NFL Pod. How about that? How about that? So help us out, please, if you can. If you got, I reckon it takes about 45 seconds. That's my guess. To head on over to sportspodcastawards.com, you got to register your email and vote for us as your favorite NFL show. It's going to help us because, quite frankly, we like a bit of chest puffing. But also, if we win that award, we think we've got a better shot of getting Drew Lock, Joe Judge, maybe even Urban Meyer on the show next season. And that is our wish list for next season, as you all well know. So head on over to sportspodcastawards.com, sportspodcastawards.com. And vote for the show. Appreciate it. Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show. Good to have you with us, gang. Shane Vereen in the house, Super Bowl winner, to cast his eyes over Super Wild Card Weekend. And what a great shout to tell us what he thinks his former coach Bill Belichick will be feeling right now, given the manner of that Patriots defeat. The Bills were formidable. The Chiefs took care of business and shut down Ben Roethlisberger for the final time. How about those Bengals? Producer Ol, he is starting to believe. We'll get into all of that and more with Shane Vereen. Well, seeing as we are talking about the road to the Super Bowl, we figured it made sense to get somebody that has been there, done that, got the ring, Super Bowl winning Shane Vereen back in the house. How are you, man?
Doing good. Doing good. How are you?
Really good, man. And a lot to get into with you. We're going to concentrate on the AFC with you. But I want to start things off by just flipping the script a little bit and talking about that crazy ending last night with Dallas and San Francisco, because I want to get your perspective on what went down, right? In terms of the final play or non-play of the game and spotting the ball and the criticism the Cowboys are facing, and Dak in particular, for not being aware of the fact that an official's got to touch the ball, right? So center spotted it. That was the mistake. And that's, we all know what played out then. How commonplace or widespread would you say that knowledge of the rules is and should be amongst the teams? Is it fair criticism that Dak and his line did that? Or is it a little bit unreasonable based on your playing experience? Like, would you have known that was the official rule?
Well, first I'm going to say to anybody that has friends that are Cowboys fans, reach out to them. they're down bad in a really, really poor, unfortunate way right now. And so just reach out. Harsh, yeah. Fair, yeah. Maybe just see how they're doing. Check in on them.
Yeah. Just leave it like a WhatsApp message.
Yeah.
Hey, okay, I'm here. If you need.
Yeah. Just a smiley face, you know, something to brighten their spirits. But yes, that is common knowledge. You should know that. Right. Part of being a professional is understanding the rules, knowing the rules and understanding them even a second time, because throughout the game, it might not matter. But in the fourth quarter and when you're trying to surmount a comeback and last minute drive with no timeouts, that's when you need to know the rules. Mm-hmm. That's when you need to understand. So it always comes back to get you. And you know, I don't understand. You know, there's a couple of plays. I just got to say it. There's a couple of plays that Dallas did yesterday that made absolutely no sense to me at all. Mm-hmm. Okay, you converted on the fake punt, but then why did you keep the punt team on the field on first and 10 and then run the punt team off and then run the offense on, and then you get a delay of game?
Delay of game. And so the timing of that and the fake punt was brilliant and genius. And not just that it prolonged the drive, but it was a prototypical momentum shifter, right? It was like, wow, they pulled it off. They've gambled, they pulled it off. And then all the air was let out of it instantaneously by what happened next. It was uncanny.
Yeah. You know, I figured there's going to have to be a team that steals a possession. And by stealing a possession, you know, it's a converting a fourth down, a turnover, or a fake punt. for a conversion. And Dallas, I didn't think Dallas was going to have be the team that has to steal a possession. I thought it was going to be more San Fran. I figured Dallas was going to come out and kind of roll early on, but yeah, they just did not. They could not get anything going. And the defense held up their end of the bargain. They only allowed 7 points in the second half.
Right.
I mean, Dallas couldn't score more than 17 points. You know, it's just – this is an offense that's the number one ranked offense all season long. And then you get down to when it really matters in a critical game, obviously wild card game at home, you won the division. And you put on a performance like that. I could not understand really what's going on. And then just the way the last drive went down, what made it even worse. It just made the loss even worse in my mind. The offensive line and Dak has to understand that the ref has to stand over the ball until both sides are set. And then, and once he takes his hand off the ball and backs away, then you can snap it. You have to understand that. And you have to know that going in. And what you do is you create a gap so that the official can get there quickly. You hand the ball to the official, let him spot it, let him give him his space. He'll spot it. He'll get out of your way. And then you can snap the ball I mean, you know, it's just, you know, there's certain organizations that, you know, it's good for football when Dallas Cowboys are good. And then they go out in the wild card game. And this is a chance for Dak to kind of reverse the narrative and for a chance for him to prove that he is a top quarterback in this league and beat a good team in San Francisco. And they just didn't do it.
They choked. I mean, I with you 100% on that. I really figured that. The more that it went on, the more the week went on, and Ollie and I were joking about it on Edge Rush because the 49ers were his Drew Lock of the week, his lock pick of the week, and I had taken the Cowboys, and I was pretty confident about that. And then more and more sharps that I know, more and more smart minds, I was hearing more and more, the 49ers are going to do it. But I didn't expect the manner of the defeat. As you say, the way the offense was so vanilla for so much of that game, I expected if the Cowboys go down, they're going to go down swinging. If anything, I thought it was defensively that they might have had more problems than they did. And as you say, particularly in the second half, they really stepped up and were present and correct there. Who ultimately, and then we'll get on to the Pats Bills, who ultimately do you think bears the most responsibility for the way that final drive went so off the rails? Was it Kellen Moore for some of the play calling, McCarthy in the mix there as well? Dak, for his lack of smarts. And I know he's by no means isolated in that, you know, that his line should have stepped up as well. Or as someone pointed out, just needed Larry Fitz to run in and take care of it.
Yeah.
That would be an amazing cameo. If NFL did WWE, that's what would happen. Larry Fitz. Fitz's music. So who do you think carries the can for that? Or is it a collective responsibility?
You know, it's more of a collective, in my opinion, but for like each person that you named for a different reason, it's Mike McCarthy's fault because he's the head coach and he's an offensive coach, right? And his time management skills have been poor for the last two seasons. I mean, even if you go back his entire career, and at some point you have to look yourself in the mirror and fix that, because that's crucial. Kellen Moore, I wasn't a fan of the playing calling really all game. I felt that there was an advantage that Dallas had. And if they were able to run the ball and get CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper in one-on-one situations, and you take advantage of that. And unfortunately, they didn't take advantage of enough of them. And then it's on Dak Prescott as well, because he is the quarterback. He's a vet. He's the leader of this team. He's been in these situations, critical situations, at the end of games. And, you know, that's on him. He's the coach on the field. The quarterback is the extension of the coaching staff that's in the huddle, and it's on the field, and he's the one running everything. So yeah, part of that's his fault as well. But as a team, 14 penalties, Dallas. As a team, they ran the ball for 77 yards, and the Niners ran it for 169 and two touchdowns. I mean, they just got physically dominated. In a game that I thought was going to be a chance for the Dallas Cowboys to take a step towards the NFC Championship game, somewhere they haven't been in years.
Yeah. Hugely disappointing. And that was almost exactly the language that Jerry Jones used. Extraordinarily disappointing. right now, if you are Mike McCarthy, or Kellen Moore's probably going to get a head coaching gig somewhere else and just get out of Dodge. Yeah. No, here's the ball. Mike McCarthy is going to be sweating it, I think, over the next couple of days. If Jerry was extraordinarily disappointed with that performance, what would Bill Belichick be feeling the morning after the Bills just dismantled his Patriots?
You know, the way that that happened, and, you know, the defense for the Patriots, the last two games against the Bills just refuses to get off the field. They just were having such a tough time getting off the field. There's certain losses that you look at, you know, big blowout losses. A lot of the times when there's a big blowout loss, it's a reflection, in my mind, it's a reflection on the coaching staff or the head coach not preparing the team enough. But I don't necessarily put blowout losses squarely on players. When it's that big of a margin, when it's that lopsided of a game, the guys just weren't prepared. They weren't ready to go. And so because of that, because that's Bill's job and he takes that extremely seriously, I think he's probably woke up feeling not too good about himself and the way that he probably feels like he let his team down. And in a lot of ways, you know, I think they kind of let each other down.
So that's really interesting. And Bill will take it on the chin in that respect and take ownership of that. At the same time, look, I don't think anybody expected the Bills to be so in complete control of a game like that. But nevertheless, they were favored. I think most people figured, well, maybe it was slightly divided, but I think the majority anyway were probably leaning towards the Bills, but certainly didn't anticipate that kind of blowout. When you look at the season as a whole and this development, which goes back to last season, the second half of last season and the Pat staying in contention despite quite a lackluster roster, all the re-upping in the offseason with free agency and the draft, and then what's played out this year with the rookie quarterback, let's not forget, when the dust has settled, and obviously Belichick's going to be frustrated at the manner and the severity of the defeat, but do you think he'll look at this season as a whole as one of progress and be optimistic about their ambition for next season?
Yeah. Especially, you know, missing the playoffs last year. So that is a step in the right direction with a rookie quarterback. But there's a saying in football that's you are what your record says you are. And at the end of the day, they're a 10-8 team. That's how they finished this year. And, you know, I know the standard and the bar is set much higher than 10-8 and losing in the wild card round in New England. I know that. So they came up far short of their goal. However, there's a lot of really good things to take away from this season. And I think Mac Jones did some growing up. I think the running backs did some growing up this year. I think the defense grew up a little bit this year with some new pieces. And although the defense didn't play well every single game, and they obviously didn't play well against Buffalo the last two meetings, you know, there's something to grow on. There's a foundation now that they can build upon. Hopefully they're able to bring most of those guys back, because I do think this is a good Patriots team that they have and just inexperienced. But, you know, it takes time to be experienced.
Yeah. And I guess as well, you can point to injuries defensively that had some bearing certainly on what we saw against the Bills. And also the credit has got to go to Brian Daboll and obviously Josh Allen and collectively the Bills offense playing an almost flawless game. I mean, looking at the way that Allen was playing, do you think many current defenses in the NFL could have handled him? Do you think that the Patriots allowed him? Because the big narrative going in was, well, as they've talked about, as Belichick and his team have talked about, it is so difficult to know how to play this guy, because it's not as simple as just saying, well, we'll contain him in the pocket because he's a decent pocket passer. And if they can buy him enough time in the pocket, a receiver is going to get open at some point anyway. So it's very difficult to play this guy when he's in form like this. Do you look at the current NFL defenses and think, could many have kept up with the way the Bills played?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, I think it was in the first quarter. I think probably about the second drive of the game, and they called like a QB sweep, a QB run, and then they pulled offensive linemen to get out in front of Josh Allen. And this is a playoff game, a wild card game, and Josh Allen is running down the field in a called quarterback run. That right. shows me the mentality of this Buffalo team, and they're not going to back down. They're not going to not play physical. They're going to bring it, and they're going to call their best plays. And if that's Josh Allen running the football down the right-hand sideline for 17 yards, I mean, why not? I was extremely impressed with this Buffalo Bills offense and Brian Daboll and the way that they called this game. They had an answer for everything that the Patriots were throwing at them defensively. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when Josh Allen is playing like that, and he kind of had played like that two or three weeks ago, their second meeting in New England, when they kind of ran away, when the Bills kind of ran away with it, and his confidence level against the Patriots is just going up and up. And right. when you can go out, when you're Buffalo, and you can go out and have a performance like that against a good Patriots team, a good, well-coached team that doesn't make many mistakes. Now I think Buffalo might have a chance to really to beat Kansas City this week.
Oh, God, I really want to get it. I want to get into that game and preview that. I want to ask you about the development of the ground game in particular with Buffalo. And it's something that Daboll talked about. And Singletary was getting more and more focus as the season went on and more people paying attention to, oh, actually, they are starting to deliver a ground game, because it had been pretty vanilla prior to that. And that was okay because Allen's such a significant dual threat player. But Daboll was saying, we realized that we had to invest in this and had to leverage it a bit more because we were getting worked out and we were not becoming one dimensional, but certainly it was becoming harder and harder to execute the game plan we wanted without it. And it was something that I was thinking about, Shane, earlier in the season, that those teams that have a Lamar, a Josh Allen level quarterback that is so prolific. And so you want to design runs for them all the time and you want to hand them the ball so often, that it's hard to establish for rhythm, for consistency, just for touches, a strong ground game behind them. It's not a straightforward thing. And now the balance is a little bit more leveled there. That seems to be a real masterstroke from Daboll and the Bills to bring, because it's not as if, unless you might disagree with this, but I think everybody's felt Singletary's always had the talent, right? That it's not as if he's suddenly become a good player, but he's just getting more opportunity. They're designing plays for him to allow him to fulfill that potential.
Yeah, when you want to be a running football team, when you want to get your run game going, it's a concerted effort. You really have to call runs, even in situations where you might not want to, because you're trying to set a statement. You're trying to wear down the defensive line. You're trying to make running and forcing the defense to stop the run their number one goal, right? And when you can do that, when you can impose your will physically, because running the ball is physical. It's a physical statement that an offense is making to a defense. Either you're going to stop this or you're not going to stop it, and we are going to run the ball down your throat all game long. And so it's a concerted effort. When teams that run the ball or try to run the ball, like the Chiefs are kind of going through, they run it, but they don't really run it. You know, they don't run it enough to really work out all the kinks and to really get the ground game going. They want to run it, but they want to run it to supplement the pass. They don't want to run the football to run the football. What we're seeing now in Buffalo is, especially last week, was they're running the football to run the football, whether it's with Singletary, whether it's with Moss earlier in the year, or whether it's with Josh Allen. I mean, Josh Allen had 66 yards on the ground. You know, that's a concerted effort. Devin Singletary, 16 carries for 81 yards. That's a concerted effort. And as a team, I think they ran 29 times for 174 yards and 2 rushing touchdowns. That is a concerted effort to improve and to impose the run game.
It's a great point. Let's bring that nicely then to their matchup with the Chiefs, because as you say, they have failed to do that. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire and his ongoing injury issues, I think, are a significant part of that. Same thing. I thought that they would start to give him the rock more and establish. I thought the Chiefs would attempt to do the tail end of the regular season into the playoffs. The same thing, right? Now, McKinnon had a good game against the Steelers, but a lot of that was at the backfield, right? At 81 receiving yards, 61 on the ground, had the score as well. I mean, he's therefore establishing himself as a significant part of this Chiefs attack, but to your point, and it's a great one, not in the same way. So bringing this all together, we know that the Chiefs are a team you can run on, although, and maybe it was the way that the game played out, they kept Najee Harris in check. They kept the Steelers ground game in check, and that was fundamental for the Steelers to have any shot at beating them. And they neutralized Najee Harris and the Steelers ground game, Benny Snell as well, pretty effectively. It's going to be an altogether different proposition, of course, against the Bills. Is that one of the fundamental matchups here? Now the Bills have got this ground game really rolling, and it is a traditional weak spot for this Chiefs defense. Do you think that is what the Bills are going to really key in on?
I think so. I think you have to keep Patrick Mahomes in the offense on the sideline.
Right.
As good as well as Buffalo's playing, you don't want to let Patrick Mahomes get hot and allow that offense to be on the field any more times than they need to be on the field. If Buffalo has any shot at winning this game, they have to run the ball because they need to, like I said, keep Patrick Mahomes on the sideline. They need to create first downs. They need to stay ahead of the sticks. They can't put themselves back in, because when you make mistakes against an offense or a team like the Chiefs, yeah, their defense isn't that great, but their offense is so good that those mistakes will cost you points. And when we're talking about Kansas City, we're talking about touchdowns. Remember we were talking about the Vegas and the Cincinnati game, and you can't trade field goals for touchdowns. Kansas right. City does not. Kansas City scores touchdowns. And if they're close enough and if the offense is rolling, they're going to go for it on as many fourth downs as they can in order to score touchdowns and not field goals. So the way you combat that is you ball control. You control the ball. You have to put together 10 plus play drives, and then you have to score touchdowns at the end of those drives. That's how you win ball games against potent offenses, against offenses that can score in 3-4 plays. Mm. You have to limit the amount of time that you allow the Kansas City offense to be on the football field.
But do you think that it's a fair point and accepted, but do you think the Kansas offense has had to change this season from that quick strike, two plays, but wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, to, you know, we've seen a lot of drives where, you know, 10, 11, 12 plays, 6-7 minutes. The patience that I guess Mahomes has had to develop this season. Do you think that could lulling teams into a false sense of security, and they are still absolutely capable of that deep strike 67-yarder that shuts teams down when they go into a 14-21 zip lead? Or do you think the offense has evolved and won't really ever regress, but look back at that style of play?
Yeah. Whenever you have Tyreek Hill in the field, you have a legitimate shot, deep threat. Right. Yeah. Right. Legit. And when you have a guy like Patrick Mahomes that could throw the ball a quarter mile, you'll have a deep threat. What defenses have been doing this year, though, for the Chiefs, and I think this is where a lot of their troubles came early in the year, and they had to kind of learn how to play a different style of offense. Defenses were just taking away the deep threat. And they still are. And most defenses are doing actually a pretty good job of it. As much tape as they have seen, they're still being successful with it. But they're taking away the deep threat and forcing Patrick Mahomes to throw the ball underneath, forcing the Kansas City Chiefs offense to put 8, 9, 12 play drives together, because that's a lot harder. And when you're a quick strike offense like the Chiefs have been the last couple of seasons, when you're used to scoring in 5-6 plays, now you got to put a 12 play drive together. That's a completely different scenario. That's a completely different ball game. That takes work. Because when you talk about a 12 play drive, you're talking about 12 snaps. That's 12 times we cannot jump off sides. That's 12 times where we cannot have a penalty. We can't have a holding penalty. That's going to set us behind the chains. And out of 12 snaps, you're probably looking at least three third down conversions on that drive. You know, that's a lot more difficult of an offense to execute than like a 3-4 play deep bomb to Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what defenses are doing. They're taking away the deep threat, the big threat. And a lot of that is because the Chiefs can't run the football. So they're allowed. So the safeties can stay back because the front seven is handling the run game.
Right.
Anybody that's playing the Chiefs, they're keeping the safeties back to take away the deep threat and allowing the front seven to handle the run game. And it's been working. That was kind of the troubles that the Chiefs were going through earlier this season.
Such a good point. You know, on the development of the offense, how much of that has been down to giving the offensive line time to gel, an all new offensive line, right? And the fact that unit takes time. Do you think that has had some bearing in, as the season has gone on, they've got more varied, more considered with the play calling and the drives? Or is it purely a sense that their hand has been forced, the deep threat's gone, all right, so we've got to beat them by slicing and dicing?
You know, that's a great question. And I would say it's probably a little bit of both. I mean, but the overarching thing in my mind is that you have to run the ball to run the ball. You can't try and run it 15 times a game and with an offensive line that's shifting around every week. You can't run the ball 15 times a game and expect expect the run game to produce anything. This isn't a league where it's that easy to run the football. You know, like I said before, it's a concerted effort. You have to run the ball in uncomfortable situations when you would rather throw it. And Andy Reid loves throwing the ball and all the creativity that comes out of that offense. Trust me, it's fun to watch. But at the same time, until you make it a point that we're going to run the ball 25 times a game, or we're going to run the ball 30 times a game and work our play action and really work the ground game, until you get to that point, you're just running it just to run it. And that's what I see the Kansas City Chiefs doing. I don't think they're giving the offensive line or the running backs even really, you know, a chance to really get something going, just because there's not enough reps.
So which way do you see this one going? And it's early in the week, so that's maybe a loaded question. And you can take a pass if you want, Shane Breen. I'm not going to force you on the spot. But assuming that nothing dramatic happens in terms of, you know, personnel missing the game because of COVID, anything like that, do you have a strong leaning either way at the moment?
You know, because Kansas City's at home, I'm kind of leaning towards there. And I've played at Arrowhead, and it's loud.
It's cold. Probably, it's loud.
It's cold and it's loud. Probably one of my favorite places to play, though. That place is sweet. So I think the Chiefs, because their confidence level is back to 2019 Chiefs.
Wow, that's a big call.
Yeah, I just feel it offensively, and you know, if the defense, I think the defense is good enough to create turnovers. So I think they're going to get a turnover or two from the Bills. And I think that's going to be the difference. And I think that's going to be enough. I don't think the Chiefs are going to win by what we saw this weekend. I see the Chiefs winning maybe by five.
By five,
somewhere around there. I think it's going to be tight. And I think it's going to come down that the Bills are going to have the ball. I don't know why I think this, but the Bills are going to have the ball late in the game, late in the fourth quarter, and the Chiefs defense is going to step up and get a defensive stop. And that's how the Chiefs are going
to
win the game.
I love it. So Allen's going to have the shot to win it. Chiefs D, the much maligned Chiefs D, is going to step up and take care of it. Cannot wait for this game. Incidentally, I meant to say when we were talking about the Bills-Pats game, how pissed off would Belichick have been when they wheel in Mitch Trubisky to take three back-to-back back-to-back knees? Yeah, that was just final. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, but hey, you know, that's what happens when you get blown out against a division rival. You know, everything's on the table. You know, they're not gonna gracefully beat you. You know, when it's a division rival and it's a wild card game and you're home, you're gonna beat the snot out of them if you can.
That was a shot fired, though, wasn't it? Like wheeling in Trubisky to take three knees. That was just, I wish someone had asked about that. I mean, you know, the New Year's Eve resolution question from a few weeks back. Like that brave report of it dead to throw that at Belichick. Someone had dropped in. Just Coach Belichick, on a scale of 1 to 10, how pissed off were you that it was, and the fact it was Mitch Trubisky? As well. Oh boy. Actually, just jumping back to the Chiefs Steelers game quickly, because I want to get your perspective on Roethlisberger and the end of his career. A player, of course, you went up against, right? You must have squared off against Roethlisberger in your time, and one of the greats of all time, and certainly of his generation, a future Hall of Famer. Do you think there is an argument to say, and this season's had some brilliant chapters in his career written, not least how they got into the playoffs and that Week 18 finale? But do you think there is an argument to not begrudge Roethlisberger for this, but he has maybe played a season or two too many, and now the succession plan is a big old problem for Pittsburgh?
Yeah, it really is. I think too many. I think this year and last year were just, you know, there's some players that are afforded the ability to go out still looking like themselves in a sense. These last 2 years, Ben Roethlisberger has not really looked like him, like what I know Ben Roethlisberger used to be like, you know, and it stinks, because like, I feel like that we're going to remember, I hope I'm not, but I know the younger generation is going to remember the old Ben Roethlisberger, like the one that we've seen these last few seasons, and not even understand how dominant he was when he first came into this league and was winning Super Bowls and was on some physical football teams, as well as throwing the ball all over the yard to all those receivers that he's had throughout the years. So that's the only reason why I wish he would have retired a couple years earlier. So that way we didn't have to see these last 2 years
and the punch drunk Ben, right?
Kind of like stain what your memories a little bit. But I'll always try to remember Super Bowl winning Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, it's a great shot. I've got a theory about that. The injury he got, I reckon he might have gone out, particularly if they'd had a playoff run that season. I reckon he might have, because he was talking about retiring the year, maybe in the year before that as well. And then he got injured. I thought, oh, well, I'm definitely coming back. I'm not going out like this. And then
right.
Yeah. And then one last hurrah, it didn't pay off. But saluting him anyway, hell of a player. You mentioned Arrowhead's one of your favorite places to play.
Yeah.
What in terms of friskiest crowd, right? A opposition crowd. I mean, they must be up there. But who gave you the most jip, the most trouble?
Philly and Buffalo. Philly and Buffalo. Yeah, but I love Buffalo. I like Buffalo because it was very much like a college atmosphere. Mm. Which I think is cool. If you go to college football games, you know, you got the student sections, you got the bands, everyone's talking trash to you. And like, I loved playing college football for that reason. There's just so much more added to it. And it feels like it means more, you know, because the student section is, I mean, that's probably my favorite part. But when you go to Buffalo, you get that feeling like everybody's from there. Everybody's invested, like you feel like the whole town of Buffalo is in one place, in one stadium, you know, and they're there to have a good time and be as loud as possible. And they have the most annoying song. Oh my God. Every time they score, it plays and it's like a spin off of like James Brown. Yeah. It's terrible, but it works.
It's good. Do you give it back when you're getting jipped from the fans? Do you bow back or how do you play it?
Yeah, sometimes I do, but I will say in Philly, I was in pregame warmup. I was catching kickoff returns, and I was just jogging back, waiting for the ball. And the guy, I forget what he said, but it was good. And I actually went over and shook his hand and we started laughing. I was like, you know what? Like that's probably the best diss that I've heard about myself. And I got to give you some credit for that. And he was really cool after that.
Love that. That's the best way to deal with it, man. Just like, fair play, man. Props. That is
like good. He said something. I turned around. I was like, yeah, absolutely. You're right. I forget what he said though, but it was really funny. So I have fun with it. You know, like, there's some fans that could get a little bit too out of hand. And if that's the case, then you just ignore them. But if they're good, or you know what I mean? Like I'll give them props if they have something good to say.
Love that. Let's talk Raiders Bengals game. We did on radio, of course, and came down to the wire in the end, which, you know, we were scratching our heads about, because much as we love the fight of the Raiders and all season long, they've shown that, of course, that's how they're in the playoffs in the first place. This was a game where we kept thinking, how the hell are the Raiders still in this game? This is just what's going on. The Bengals didn't take their red zone chances, which could have come back to haunt them. It was a point you made really early on. You said this is all about playoff football. It's all about taking those chances. So the Bengals got away with it that time. Might not be so straightforward against the Titans. What did you make overall of Cincinnati's performance against Vegas?
They played well enough to win. And I think it stops at that point. Here comes the field goals versus touchdowns, but this is a young team, and for probably everybody in the building, I don't know how many guys have been in a playoff game before, you know, but so
I was trying to work out as well, because that's the first playoff win in 31 years.
Yeah.
How many players on the Bengals team are older than 31?
Right. Not many. Yeah, not many.
Taylor's only about 27. So.
Yeah. You know, but at the same time, you know, for them being young and inexperienced, I thought they handled, you know, the situations that they were put in pretty well. You know, Joe Burrow seemed comfortable and confident for the whole game. The Vegas wasn't really able to rattle him much, although I think that's more of who he is as a player and as a person. I don't think the Raiders had the right plan defensively against the Bengals. And offensively, the Raiders, it was just too inconsistent. You know, but it's because I think it was inconsistent because they couldn't trust the run, the ground game as much as they wanted to, because they were down two scores here and there. And they couldn't score touchdowns either when they got down into the red zone, you know? So I'm assuming that Tennessee is going to have their way with Cincinnati.
Really?
I believe so, because I just don't, because Tennessee's not going to allow Ja'Marr Chase to ruin the game. You know, they're a much better team defensively in that state. I thought the Raiders should have been doubling Ja'Marr Chase the entire game. His first four catches were just underneath throws, and he was wide open on comeback routes. It's because they're playing so far off of him. Like, don't make it easy for the team that has a first time quarterback in the playoffs and a young guy, a young team, Ja'Marr Chase, Joe Burrow. Don't make it easy on them. You know, make it tough, make it difficult, make him have to go through his second and third read, make him have to check the ball down to the back. And the Raiders didn't do that at all. I mean, the Bengals didn't even punt until the third quarter. Right. So Tennessee will not allow it to be that easy at all.
Let's talk about the Titans defense, because we often, and we're inevitably going to have to talk about Henry and his return and keying on their offense and Henry, of course, in particular. But I guess this season, one of the interesting narratives has been when Henry went down and the offense has dropped off, whichever way you cut it, it has. And I know that backups have stepped in and done a capable job without necessarily lacking that big play explosion of Henry, right? But the defense is what has carried them to the number one seed. And yeah, that is a unit with maybe the Kevin Byard's the notable exception there. Everyone else in that unit is, you wouldn't define as a superstar. And even Byard, I think, is kind of under the radar in many respects, right? Although he's an all-pro. But it's not a team, compare it to the Cowboys defense we were just talking about, and the 49ers. It's not a team, it's not a unit that is laden with big name playmakers. Right. So is that testament to, in particular, Mike Vrabel and his coaching team getting the best out of them? Is it that it's Tennessee, so it's not a fashionable market? We don't really think, a lot of the media likes to paint a one-dimensional narrative. So the Titans are all about Derrick Henry, and that's what they're about. What do you put down to the fact that this Tennessee defense is despite the number one ranking, kind of under the radar?
Yeah. Good coaching. You know, they clearly have guys there that understand the system. They understand their place in the system. They understand any given day what's expected of them, what's asked of them in their specific role. It's clear to me that everybody on that defense understands their role and understands where they're supposed to line up. And, you know, you say that lightly, but there are defenses out there that can't get lined up for four quarters, not correctly anyways, you know, it might not look like they're misaligned to the regular casual viewer. But if you really understand the game and gap schemes and controlling gaps and understanding the goal and the scheme around each defense, it's easy to see when players are out of alignment. You don't really see many mental errors with Tennessee Titans, and that's a testament to their coaching staff and the guys that they have in there. You know,
it's a great point, and Vrabel, I know that this is a point that is being amplified a lot and increasingly so with this season, but you know, he's a Belichick lieutenant, right? I mean, that is very much that MO, isn't it?
Yeah. You understand, you know, it doesn't take long when you're being coached by Bill Belichick. It doesn't take long to understand team. It doesn't take long to understand expectations and understanding your role, knowing your place, knowing where you fit in, why you're in the building, what is asked of you, you know. And a lot of times I feel like coaches, they have a scheme, and regardless of the players that they have, regardless of their roster, they're going to run that scheme. The good coaches craft a scheme around the players that they have, which means each and every year it's something's a little different. And I see that with Tennessee. Especially defensively. It takes a talent to be able to do that, to coach that up. And, you know, hats off to the players for understanding it and understanding their role and understanding what they need to get done on Sundays.
Vrabel readily a favorite in many people's eyes for coach of the year. And I think that's a, that is a real, really fair shout. In this particular matchup though, you've shown your hand a little bit. Do you think the Titans will, particularly with Henry back, will prove to be too much for the Bengals? Why do you feel that this is it down to the defense being able to contain the Bengals in a way the Raiders couldn't?
Yeah. I think so. I think the offense is going to score anywhere from 25 to 30 points. That's kind of who they are. That's kind of what they've been for most of this year, Tennessee. And I just think defensively, I think the team is more experienced. You know, Vrabel has coached in big games and AFC championship games before, on the road and at home. Tannehill's been there. You know, they've had enough of the key pieces there to go through the experience so that they understand what it takes. Cincinnati doesn't really understand what it takes yet. They got a win in the wild card round, but now we're in the divisional round and that's a little different. And then the next round is a little different. And then obviously it's the Super Bowl after that. Cincinnati, although they've had success and they won last week in a tight one, they don't understand what it takes yet. They will, but not yet.
Yeah. I hear you. I am big on the Titans for a deep run this year, but this Bengals side, as you made this point on radio, the fearlessness, right, that they're showing. Yeah. I mean, that is
it's fun.
It's fun to watch. And they say, I can't call this one either way right now because of that. You know, and Burrow's the point you make about Burrow, I think, is maybe outside of anything else, the thing that should fill the hearts of Bengals fans with glee, because that moxie to show that poise in a playoff game, we've seen it quite a lot this season, to show the poise in his first playoff game, I look completely at home, like it was his 50th playoff game. I mean, that is, irrespective of anything else he's doing on the field, that is good news for the Bengals. And let's wrap on that. Let's wrap on whatever happens against the Titans, just how far this organization has come. And Zach Taylor's a coach that gets a fair amount of criticism, but he's seeming to put that in check now. But from a front office perspective as well, the decisions they've made, taking Ja'Marr Chase, when they got a lot of criticism for taking him over other players at that point in the draft, and other decisions they made in free agency as well, bringing in, you know, some really key defensive players that have changed the look of that unit. This is an organization that is absolutely trending in the right direction.
Absolutely. And rightfully so. You know, Zach Taylor, I mean, he proved me wrong as far as how good of a coach he could be. I didn't see it, but I see it now. And it seems like that culture and that foundation that they have built over the last couple of years, for the last 2 years, it's really coming to fruition. I think a lot sooner than a lot of people thought. I was thinking Cincinnati would be playing like this level of football next season. I wasn't expecting them to be playing it this year. But shoot, if they went out, they got the players that they needed defensively. They drafted well offensively. There seems to be a great working relationship between Zach Taylor and the coaching staff and their relationship with the players. They're clearly able to relate to the younger guys to get them to go out and execute at this level. That's impressive. And it's not easy. So, you know, you really have to consider Zach Taylor as one of the top head coaching. His resume from this season alone should put him in my mind top seven head coaches.
Yeah, that's a high praise indeed. And he shot right up. Hey, you know, I lied. One more for you before we let you go. Another organization, of course, that you play for, the New York Giants. Super quick, who would you like to see take over as head coach there?
Let's see. I want somebody that's experienced. The last three head coaches for the Giants were first time head coaches and it did not work out. I would love for them to hire somebody with experience, somebody that's been a head coach before. So maybe that's a Dan Quinn. I'm not sure.
A Flores, Brooklyn boy.
Flores, maybe. Yeah.
Coming home.
Would be sweet. Be flow up there. That would be awesome. Yeah. But I would really love the New York Giants to start with an experienced head coach. That's what they need right now.
Yeah, they need a lot right now. That is for sure. Brilliant stuff. Shane Vereen, always a pleasure checking in with you. Thanks for your insight, man. Look after yourself and come back soon.
Appreciate it.
Brilliant stuff from Shane. I and Mike dropping by tomorrow to look at the other games we didn't cover, to look ahead at the other divisional matchups that we didn't cover. The pods coming thick and fast. this week as we crank up to the Super Bowl. Ollie and I will drop an edge rush a little bit later on. Hell, we might even sneak in a College Days if we're feeling in the mood. So much coming your way. Thanks for the support as ever. We'll see you with Iron Mike.
Podcast Network.